Good afternoon. We're going to be opening up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is February 13th, 2017. Our agenda today is to hold a public hearing on House Bill 5002, Department of Administrative Services. And so we're going to ask our Chief Operating Officer and DAS Director, the mighty and great Katie Koba, to come on up and join us. And so we're going to open up this public hearing. Welcome, Director.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. That's a really scary introduction.
A Umatilla County lady, a Pendletonian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Katie Koba, and I'm the state's Chief Operating Officer and Director for the Department of Administrative Services. And I realize this is your first budget presentation. If memory serves me correct, it's been a couple years since we did this. I didn't know if you had your fiscal office staff make any opening remarks or if we just dive in.
Mr. Chairman of the Committee, Department of Administrative Services here to present their budget. This is the first day of 3 days of scheduled hearings.
There we go.
That was.
So our one rule is we're going to do everything we can to avoid acronyms.
And I haven't said one yet, have I?
No.
So if I said Department of Administrative Services, you want me to call it Department of Administrative Services always, or does that cover it and I can call it DAS from that point forward?
As you're talking about complex issues, look at the member's face and decide if we need to slow up a little bit.
All right. Thank you.
I would share with you, Director, many on this committee are new to the process.
Well, good afternoon. As the co-chair indicated and Representative Gomberg indicated, this is my first time as director in front of the General Government Committee. For those of you that don't know me, I previously served for 13 and a half years as director of the Department of Agriculture. I started in this new position on October 1st, and certainly when we get into more of the details about the department's budget, I have a fairly broad understanding about the agency, but there will probably be questions that I can't answer, and so I'll turn to staff to ask them to help. In the job as the chief operating, and there was one other piece of information that I want to share as well in the spirit of making sure all conflicts or potential conflicts are aired early and often. Many of you know that my husband is a lobbyist, and he lobbies for a number of different clients. I'm not aware of any state money that goes to him, and I should know because I also do his books. But to be clear and honest for everyone and not hide anything, he is a lobbyist for a number of clients, and I have also made that clear for the governor. When the governor was talking to me about being the chief operating officer, I visited with her about what were her priorities for the position, and also knowing my background in state government, which, as I'd mentioned, 13 and a half years as director of the Department of Agriculture, but also 31 and a half years as a state employee. So I've been here quite a bit of time and have had a lot of experience in state government. And so in that conversation and listening to what she wanted out of a chief operating officer and my experience, there were areas of emphasis that I've developed coming into the role of the chief operating officer. And I'm going to speak to both my role as COO and my role as director of DAS. The COO perspective is much more externally oriented. And in that position, I view myself as really a leader in terms of the enterprise of state government. And then obviously my second job is that as being the director of the Department of Administrative Services. So as I've developed my areas of emphasis as COO, I wanted to share those with you, really as we talk about the enterprise of state government and where some of our priorities are. The first area of emphasis is that of equity, and I think many of you have heard the governor speak to this quite a bit. It is certainly a priority of mine as well, and we have talked about these areas of emphasis with the enterprise leadership team, which I'll speak to a little bit more as we move through the presentation. But certainly in terms of equity, helping state government become more representative of the population it serves. So making sure that we in state government look like and can connect with those that we serve throughout the state of Oregon. Being more inclusive of all perspectives and voices, and more mindful of institutional barriers to success facing traditionally underserved Oregonians. And we talk about equity in a number of different ways, and I think if I had a conversation with each of you, you would probably describe it differently. But from my perspective, it certainly means when we think about people of color, but also people who have different religions, who come from different cultures, who even live in different parts of this state. So geography for me is certainly a key area in terms of equity. And thinking about how we bring into state government those various factions to really represent all Oregonians, but then also how we in state government serve Oregonians and think about how we're reaching out and making sure we're connecting to all that diverse group. And so it's quite an area of excitement, I think, for us when we talk about it amongst agency directors. This is an area that they're also equally passionate about. And as we move forward, we're really working closely with governor staff, who the governor has a director for diversity and inclusion, and working with her in terms of how we move forward on this equity agenda. The second area of emphasis is that of transparency and accountability. This is also should be of no surprise to any of you in terms of where the governor is passionate about how we in state government do our business to be more transparent and be more accountable to Oregonians. Illuminating the inner workings of state government and fostering an environment that promotes stewardship of resources and sharing of information. And I think we in state government struggle with that. Certainly, we've done a lot of work around public records and how we can be more consistent across the enterprise of state government in terms of how we respond to public records requests, the kinds of fees that we charge. But it's also much broader than public records. And when I think about my career in state government, it really is how we are reaching out to those that are interested in the work that we do and conveying information in a way that makes sense to them. So we certainly have a language all of our own, and the co-chair indicated that in terms of acronyms. And it's difficult for our customers when they're interacting with a variety of agencies to understand that language, to understand how information gets presented. For us in state government to think about how we do present information in a way that's more easily understandable. I think the transparency website, from my perspective, is a classic example. You can go online and see all of the transactions in terms of expenditures that state government makes. But I don't even know that I could, with my experience in state government, really go through that list and truly understand what it all means. So part of it is thinking more about how we can share information in a way that makes sense to our customers and gets at the kinds of questions that they have. And that's a struggle for us in state government. The third area of emphasis, leadership development. This is something that I've spent quite a few years on. When I was director of the Department of Agriculture, I was the lead on the enterprise effort around the Oregon Management Project, which really is focused on managers in state government, how we train managers, how we hold them accountable, how we even classify them. We have a very antiquated classification system in state government. For those of you that may be familiar with, managers are oftentimes a PEM A, a PEM B, a PEM C, a PEM D, and on up the chain. It doesn't really describe anything about the kind of manager that they are. So in this area of emphasis, developing strategies and practices that grow, retain, and attract skilled leaders to meet the evolving challenges facing state government now and into the future. And I could probably spend the whole hour and a half talking to you about this. But we also know that state government, the average age of state employees tends to be higher than that of Oregonians in general. Madeline Zike, who is the Chief Human Resources Officer, can give you better statistics than I have off the top of my head. But I think the number is about 40% of state employees are eligible to retire sometime in the next 5 to 10 years. who's coming into state government and who's really helping us think about the challenging issues that we collectively are facing. I can tell you that in my career, I'm not seeing issues getting any easier. They seem to be more complex. They seem to be more difficult. How the executive branch is interacting with the legislative branch who passes policy, and the executive branch who then implements it, and how we can take those laws that you pass and implement them in the way that you wanted them to be implemented. We've heard plenty of concerns about agencies seeming to go in a different direction than maybe what was the legislative intent. Do you have a question?
Representative Gomberg, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you so much, Director. I was going to wait for you to finish the thought, but you piqued my interest when you talked about how we find new employees to fill the shoes of those that are moving on. And my question, I apologize for even asking it, but I will. Is the uncertainty about the retirement benefit having an impact on our hiring opportunities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomberg, I would say that would be one factor, but by no means the driving factor. I think there's a whole host of factors that lead state government to be challenged in terms of bringing on the best and the brightest that we can get. And I use this example all the time. I've used it in the last 3 years as I've been working on this project. I have two daughters, age 26 and 24. I grew up in a family who served in public service. And my daughters grew up, obviously watching the work that I do. And when they were in high school, I started talking to them about their interests, you know, in college and post-college and where they might want to work. And I can distinctly remember this conversation in terms of saying, so would you be interested in coming to work for state government? And what do you think their answer was? Not at all. Not at all. And it's those kinds of people that we want to be excited about coming to work for state government. But I would say most young people don't view it as the exciting, sexy place to come to work. You ask them the follow-up question, well, where would you like to work? And what do you think the answer is? Nike. So how do we compete, you know, for really the future skilled workers that we're bringing in or the future leaders for state government, when state government is not viewed as creative? Certainly for millennials, my daughter now has been in her job for 3.5 years. She says, I'm ready to look for a new job. And I said, but you've only been in your job for 3.5 years. Well, Mom, that's a long time to be in the same job. That's a completely different mindset than we have in state government. So I think we've got to think differently about how we market state government, who we're reaching out to. It interrelates very much with the equity issue and how we're creative bringing people into state government. And it is challenging when you've got a budget crisis. And is that where people want to come and work? So I think there's a whole host of things that factor into that challenge. The next area of emphasis, customer service and excellence in government. This has been, for those of you that worked with me when I was the director of the Department of Agriculture, a big passion of mine in terms of how we deliver customer service and how we interact with those constituents that we serve. Constantly striving for excellence in the work that we do and looking for efficiencies and knowing that our resources can go up and down and we have a number of fee payers. How can we make sure that we're delivering the services in the most efficient and effective way that we possibly can? So really instilling a commitment to proactively identify and solve problems, to value outcomes over outputs, and to always strive for a positive customer experience. This has been a topic that's also been a priority for the enterprise leadership team. You're going to hear from a couple of other members from ELT later in this presentation, and one of them, Pat Allen, who's the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, has also chaired ELT's Improving Government Steering Team that's really looked at a number of these issues around customer service and how we deliver our outcomes and how we can improve that within state government. And finally, my fifth area of emphasis, ambassador of public service. As I said, I've been in state government for 31.5 years. I am passionate about state service. I grew up with a father that was an elected official in this building. And for me, it's just always been something that has meant a lot to me personally. And it goes back to a number of the other things that I've talked about. But how are we going to continue to bring people into state government who are passionate about public service, particularly in this day and age when public employees are not always talked about or held in very positive light? So for me personally, and for those that I can get to come along and share this, serving as a champion for state service by identifying, developing, and sharing agency success stories and connecting the everyday work of state employees to the high-level outcomes envisioned by the governor and the legislature, I have seen state employees that have done incredible work, and they do it day in and day out, and they do it all over the state. And so for me, it's really being able to share some of those stories in a way that will be heard. And that's the other big challenge I think that we have. How can we tell these stories that people will believe about the day in and day out work that, state employees do on behalf of the citizens of the state of Oregon? So the Enterprise Leadership Team was not my creation. It was started by then COO Michael Jordan in 2011. I served on the very first Enterprise Leadership Team, as did two of the individuals that you're going to hear from in a minute. And there are very few of us left that are original members of ELT. So we've seen a lot of turnover in terms of the directors of state agencies in this state. But I'm very, very committed to the Enterprise Leadership Team, and I really view it as kind of the board of directors for the executive branch of state government in terms of how we are collaborative in looking at the enterprise of state government and how we deliver the services that we deliver and how we can think about constantly challenging ourselves to do that better. It really is a shared leadership model, and there's an inherent tension in state government between the Department of Administrative Services and state agencies. We serve on one hand in a service role. We provide services to a number of state agencies. But on the other hand, we also oftentimes tell state agencies what they can and can't do. And that doesn't always put us in the most positive light amongst our fellow state agencies. And it's just that constant tension, I think, between any kind of an administrative function and a programmatic function. And I view DAS as the administrative function and state agencies as the programmatic function. So I think Michael Jordan was quite brilliant, actually, in creating the Enterprise Leadership Team and bringing state agency directors on board. And we talk about a lot of things when we meet with ELT, and we meet every other week for 2 hours. And it really is this focus around a shared leadership model and that we are all in this together. And if DAS is thinking about taking some kind of a regulatory approach to an issue, how we vet that, frankly. I view state agencies as our customers, and how we vet that with them and get their input so that whatever product or regulation we're delivering, we're doing it in the best way that we possibly can. So the ELT will increase state government's ability to deliver high-value programs and services to Oregonians in a fiscally sustainable way.
So let me ask a question on that. Mm-hmm. Do you have examples of that success that you could share with the committee?
I have a couple of them coming up in a couple of slides, and if I don't get to enough of them, I've got a couple of colleagues here that I know can speak to them as
Thank
well.
You.
Here are the current members of the Enterprise Leadership Team. It consists of 23 state agency directors, so that represents a little under a quarter of the whole of state government. I think there's just around 100 state agencies. And it varies in terms of size of the agency that serves. Certainly the large agencies are members. So when you think about the Department of Transportation, Department of Human Services, the Oregon Health Authority, Department of Corrections, they are all members of the Enterprise Leadership Team. But we also have the Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners, which is a very, very small agency, and bringing that perspective about the work that we do and how it impacts very small operations in state government versus those larger entities. I think now is a good time. You know, I think what I'll do is I'm going to jump ahead to a slide and talk about some examples of the projects that we've worked on, and then both Pat and Fairbors may speak to a little bit more from their perspective. So here is that slide on ELT accomplishments. You may have heard in the governor's State of the State address her reference to a leasing initiative that was undertaken to standardize leasing approach in state government. And that was an enterprise leadership team project led by the Improving Government team, which Pat Allen is the chair of. And Pat was instrumental, really, in moving that project forward with other agencies serving on that team and staff. And this is something where we, it's a great example of how we work in the enterprise. It means that state agencies had to do some things differently, and we're not always free to maybe pick the ideal space or building that they were looking to go into. So there was a little bit of control in terms of how agencies approached their leasing decisions. We had to get buy-in from the agencies to really follow this effort. And I think the project was successful and has resulted in savings that will be achievable over the future lifetime of those leases. The Oregon Management Project, which I spoke to under the leadership development area of emphasis, is the project that I'm leading. And we're currently in the process. We have developed enterprise-wide values. It's the first time we've really had a set of values for the enterprise and competencies for the enterprise that we would expect all managers to be able to achieve. And we're now moving down the path of identifying in more detail what those competencies mean. And if you're a level one of business acumen, what it takes to get to level five, I know it kind of gets into the detail of the human resource world. That's another example of a project that's ongoing. And then work that's been done in quite intensity in the last year in terms of the Public Records Process Improvement Project, developing a consistent policy for all agencies to follow in terms of how they respond to public records requests, having developed a standardized fee structure for all agencies when they are requested to provide public records and how they assess those fees. And then there's a couple of examples of how ELT works in being more responsive to some emerging challenges. Certainly, when cannabis became legal in the state of Oregon, that posed a wide variety of very interesting challenges for agencies. And speaking about that at the ELT level and how we coordinate and understand, frankly, what the various agencies were doing and some of the challenges they were dealing with was important. And then in the last couple of years, the significant challenges we've had around wildfire and drought, and ELT has worked to coordinate and understand what the multitude of agencies do in those areas. So that's just a kind of a snapshot of examples of work that ELT has done. So what I'd like to do is back up and have both Pat Allen and Fairbors come up and give you a little quick synopsis of their take of ELT based on their own experience.
You bet. Gentlemen. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Smith and Manning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Fairbors Paksoresh, Director of Oregon Youth Authority.
And I'm Patrick Allen, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services.
So I'll start. I've been the director of OYA for 5 years, and that's about the same number of years that ELT has been in existence. Prior to ELT, we would come to agency heads meetings. Information was shared, but very little conversation occurred. For me, ELT has provided a forum for connection, collaboration, information, and focus. Coming together every 2 weeks with my colleagues has allowed me to become more connected and more engaged with what's happening at the enterprise level. When we talk about engagement, engagement is a key attribute of making organizations move forward. In our own agencies, if we can get our staff engaged and involved, we have a much better chance of gaining traction and moving our agenda forward with more speed. Similarly, by me sitting around this table, I am not only aware of what's happening in other agencies, but I'm also making that relationships, getting to know people from other agencies and the same issues that we might be facing across the enterprise. We also have opportunities to work in subgroups outside of ELT to work on specific issues, which KD mentioned a couple of those. Pat will talk about a couple of those. These are questions and issues that you are also interested in. I know that. As an example, how do we improve accountability and transparency and focus on outcomes and results? How do we break down barriers between state agencies and get to a place that we're actually operating like a true enterprise? Katie mentioned this. How do we begin to hire, train, and retain the best workforce in a state government so that we can be competitive as an employer? And an issue that Pat will talk about, how do we begin to look at physical assets of state government and look at ways, look at those things through an enterprise lens so that we can actually get the most number of dollars, efficiency, and effectiveness out of those processes. I personally have participated on work groups addressing some of these questions. Katie mentioned the state government enterprise values, which is already in place. And management competencies, which will, in my opinion, create a higher level of accountability and empowerment for managers. The process has also allowed us, and this is the other point that Katie talked about, the process has allowed us to gain a better understanding of DASA's role as an enterprise in an enterprise governance model and has led the ELT members to forge a stronger and more collaborative relationship with DAS. Though all of us as agency directors report to the governor, DAS and specifically the state COO is the conduit between the governor's office and agency heads. Governor's priorities, the executive orders that come out, and basically the policies that comes out that impact all of us, is shared by every agency head. ELT allows a forum for us to share ideas, to sit around the table, and understand priorities and direction, and that will reduce confusion and fragmentation within state government. My last point that I'd like to talk about is leadership and the critical role that it plays in organizational success. Great leaders exhibit the highest standards of ethics and leadership, and are clear about their vision, and they're also able to inspire their teams to focus on achieving the results and outcomes that they aspire to. These are key elements and attributes of a state COO. And I'm honored to have the opportunity to work with a current COO who exemplifies these core values. So with that, if there are no questions, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Pat Allen.
Thanks, co-chairs, members of the committee. Again, my name is Patrick Allen. I'm the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. If you're not familiar with us, we're the state's primary consumer protection and business regulatory agency. We deal with financial services, worker safety, construction standards, and a wide variety of other areas that we regulate. I'll make three points today briefly. First is that as an agency head, I need the Department of Administrative Services to be successful. I've been the head of my agency for about 5 years, but I've been kicking around in a reasonably senior level in state government for something like 20 years. And I can tell you that prior to the creation of the Enterprise Leadership Team, that really probably wasn't always kind of the perspective of agency heads. I think the dynamic previously was that there would be a director of DAS who would come in and make great pronouncements about how the world was going to be, and people would kind of look and think, well, but that's going to hurt when that hits. And we'd sort of watch, and there would be a level of disengagement, and sure enough, it looked like it would hurt. And there was not sort of a collective sense of ownership of decision making. I think to the second point, what the Enterprise Leadership Team has really done through through its initial construction as a shared leadership forum is to have us actually at the table participating in the creation of policies, decisions, initiatives, being able to meaningfully have an impact on whatever the enterprise is going to do, and then own those results. I'll give you one example that's in process now. Hopefully, your favorite measurably going to move forward on the replacement of the human resource information system, which is a big old legacy system that is, among other things, is challenging to maintain because the programmers who can do that language are dying of old age, and we need to move to modern systems. Well, part of what goes with that is how are we going to behave as agencies when that new system comes in? Most of us operate to one extent or another shadow systems that allow us to take this old clunky thing that was designed a long time ago for different purposes than we use it for today, and we sort of make it work. I would suggest that in the pre-enterprise leadership team days, the way an agency would approach this discussion is to say, well, I like those shadow systems. I know they give me what I need, and yeah, maybe I'll kind of give lip service to we're going to move away from them, but we'll see what's going to happen, and maybe we'll give them up, maybe we won't give them up. We're trying to have that conversation now much more proactively and upfront with agencies to talk about how what their business processes are and how those will fit with the new system and what those shadow systems are, and making sure that those functionalities are delivered by the new system and that we aren't maintaining this whole separate set of IT investments alongside that new investment that you're going to give us. That's the kind of difficult discussion that really there wasn't a vehicle for before the enterprise leadership team. Third point I'd make is that the enterprise leadership team has provided us a platform, and you've heard some references to it a couple of times, to do projects across the enterprise that allow us to be more efficient and more effective. We've talked about real estate. Let me go into that for just a minute. The state is the largest tenant for commercial rental property in the state. That's an economically powerful position to be in. There's a lot of dollars that flow from the state to landlords for properties that they rent. Up until about 4 or 5 years ago, we really didn't act like the largest tenant. We didn't act like we didn't recognize the fact that we had market power. We did a bunch of things in our leasing practices that actually put us at a huge disadvantage. We required very short-term leases tracking to bieniums. We required lease language that said we could basically cancel the lease at any time because God knows the legislature could cancel our funding and we'd be laying everybody off and closing down agencies. Now, never mind that never happens on an ordinary basis. And so we began to really look at our lease portfolio and figure out what would that look like if we were managing it more like a common commercial portfolio of leased properties. And so we were able to go in and renegotiate lease terms to get more favorable terms, to get landlords to make improvements to properties, to lengthen terms. And collectively, we saved about $60 million over the life of those leases from that point going forward. Another example I'll give that's really simple and isn't necessarily a ton of money, but Representative Smith, I think Representative Gomberg will know if you've been kicking around this building for a while, a common mantra a few years ago was, why the heck do we have 53 email systems across state government? And the answer is, today we don't. We don't have one. We still have more than one, but we had a project through Improving Government that consolidated 10,000 users onto a single email system. Now, I can tell you from my agency standpoint, it's about a wash in terms of cost, but now I've not got the person who used to be in my IT department focusing on the care and feeding of my email system. I'm able to have that person do other things that are more peculiar to my agency that nobody else can do, and I'm able to use those resources more effectively. Now, we didn't go and push to getting everybody on a single email system because each group of people you bring on, there's a lift that goes with that, and kind of the marginal value of that lift starts dropping off. But we were able to get that significant consolidation across a large number of agencies and get those kinds of effectiveness. Those are a couple of examples of the kinds of projects that we've been able to do because of the creation of ELT. With that, I'd be happy, as would Faribor's, for the hard questions to answer any questions that you've got for us.
Let me kick off. Is that all right? First of all, I've been familiar with the enterprise leadership team for quite a while. They do some pretty good work. And so I'd encourage everyone on this committee to learn more about them. So Director Koba made a statement in her introductory comments talking about that there's a lot of good work going on, and she's seen it firsthand, and there's been a struggle to let Oregonians know about this. Okay? I grew up in the 80s, got my MBA under a total quality management type program. How do we go about quantifying so we can demonstrate to the public improvements, innovations, efficiencies, and then we can put dot, dot, dot in savings. And I know we're a Ways and Means Committee and folks will go straight to the fiscal, but there's got to be a way that we can demonstrate to the public that the enterprise leadership team is bringing greater efficiencies, not just in words, but quantifying it. How do we go about quantifying this? So every 2 years we don't get the verbal story, but we get hard numbers showing that there's been improvements in innovations.
Yeah, Chair Smith, let me take a crack at that initially. And there are sort of two challenges that we face in trying to do that. One is state agency effectively runs program, people are satisfied, money is spent wisely, does not constitute a headline in any news organization that I'm familiar with, even though that happens every day. But more fundamentally, one of the challenges we have, I talked about this, replacing the human resource information system, legacy systems. We have these legacy systems all through state government or the lack of systems. It would be great to be able to comprehensively talk about what we do with our real estate management. I didn't even touch on the fact that renegotiating leases has now led us to a stage of much more effectively using a given quantity of space. I've freed up 10,000 square feet of space in our office at the Labor and Industries building alone. We don't actually have any kind of a property management system across the enterprise that allows us to use the same definitions, be able to quantify what we're doing, and be able to articulate that easily. What that means is for us to go out and provide an answer or provide data along the lines of what you just talked about becomes this massive hand-done project that ends up being shot through, not intentionally, but by virtue of how difficult the data gathering is with inconsistencies and differences, and then those inconsistencies and differences often become the story rather than what we're doing.
But isn't there a way to quantify this?
Well, sure, and we did in the case of the real estate project with
savings.
Going
to be able to see that? I'm trying to help you folks here because I know the good work you're doing. And I want to be able, you know, when you look at quality management, it's quantifiable, mm-hmm. Okay? And so I want to know, how do we quantify this good work being done?
So, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, if I might try to answer your question, let me start at the national level. Government and state employees, or basically public employees, do not have a good reputation, or they're not viewed positively by the general public. That's a fact. The second thing is that we, as public employees and government, need to be much more diligent in outcomes and results. We're really good in explaining what we do. We're not so great at showing outcomes and results. Mm-hmm. And Pat's really good at it because for the past 20-some years, I know that has been his focus and his business. I've worked for this system, for the public system in Oregon, for 27 years. And whether it's in Oregon or across the country, we've been told to not get in the news. We've been told to put our heads down and do the work. One of my co-directors from a neighboring state has been told that she cannot publish positive results in the news media. Luckily, in Oregon, that's not the case. In fact, we have a performance measure in Oregon Youth Authority that every month we disseminate positive stories to the media. But generally, that's a shift that we need to make from an old mindset to a new mindset. Mm-hmm. This is not something that's going to happen overnight. But, the other thing that I think needs to be highlighted is that the business of government is different than the business in the private sector. Generally, in the private sector, you're in the business of growing the business. You want to increase the profits, increase the business, et cetera. In Oregon Youth Authority, we want to shrink the business. Mm-hmm. So there are some significant differences between public and private organizations. And quite often, savings are not the same in the public sector as they are in the private sector. So perhaps we can also focus on cost avoidance. Mm-hmm. This ATRIS project that Pat just talked about, what would happen if we do not do that? What would have happened if we actually invested earlier in some of these legacy systems that are costing us millions of dollars today? So I think it's a new mindset is required to come around the table, but that mindset requires, first of all, competent leaders who are in place and running organizations and again, I'm delighted to be sitting around the enterprise leadership team with Katie's leadership, you know, with my colleague Pat and others. I think we have great people in the state government, but I think we need to become more intentional about how do we want to interact with the public. And we have a lot of work to do. We have a whole lot of areas of improvement.
Let me rephrase my question. And again, colleagues, the reason I'm asking these questions is because I believe in the work these folks are doing. They've done good work. We get performance measures from each agency. Has this grown to a point to where folks should be putting performance measures together to show us?
At the
work of the ELT?
Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, we have not yet created enterprise performance level measures, but both of our organizations, in addition to key performance measures, have developed scorecards and specific measures. For me, and you know, you and I have talked about this before, this really is a point of making ourselves and our staff curious about the work that we do. Mm-hmm. It's only in the environment of curiosity that we begin to improve performance. If we inject fear into the process, we're not going to get there. So I think it needs to be a collaborative process That's between fair. The legislature and state agencies to really begin. As we all know, before you can take care of the flaws, you have to surface the flaws. Our current culture in the public sector across the country does not allow us to surface the flaws because we'll immediately get punished for any flaws that exist.
If I could also make the point, it's important structurally to remember the state of Oregon is not an enterprise that has been trying to function more like an enterprise. But in terms of how we're created, how we're statutorily set up, how each of our units are accountable, we are a collection of related enterprises, sometimes with boards and commissions, sometimes not. And what we've been doing through the enterprise leadership team is trying to forge something that is an enterprise-wide perspective where one doesn't structurally inherently exist. And so to get to the place where we would do enterprise performance management requires a level of structural investment that we haven't quite gotten to yet. I think that there's a point in the future where we'll be able to do that, but I don't think we're capable of that yet.
Let me ask one more question, and we'll open this up. And what I'm about to ask you is a pointed question. Mm. I represent small rural communities, and many times feel as if they get run over the top. And I notice on our list of members here, all we have is the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, but we have many, many small little state agencies, even semi-independent state agencies. How do we know the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, when they offer their opinion, don't get run over the top by, I don't know, your agency or ODOT or DAS or Department of Corrections? How do we assure us their opinions get heard?
Well, that may be a question that's better for Director Koba, but I guess I would say from my standpoint, as I listen to people around the table, probably the only thing about their specific agency that I particularly take note of is sort of what's the topic area and how's that different from my topic area and how might their perspective as a natural resource agency or a human services agency or a public safety agency be different from mine and how that factors in. Half the people around the table, I couldn't actually even tell you exactly how big their agency is. Mm-hmm. It's really much more of what's the perspective that you bring to the table and how does that add to what I feel like I know.
Yeah, but so you feel as if the small little agencies are being represented well?
I think so.
Okay. Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So this has been great. It's really nice to learn about the work that the ELT does. But I'm going to ask a newbie question, which is, why are we as a committee being convinced of the value of this organization? What, are we going to be asked to make a decision about this group?
That's a great That's an excellent question. Director Koba, do you want to come up and share your thoughts? And maybe I can echo
I'll
a little bit.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Fahey. The reason I wanted to bring to you the Enterprise Leadership Team is really to talk, to put into perspective for you my job, which is that of being the Chief Operating Officer. There is not a budget for the ELT. You will not be asked to approve or disapprove, but it's really more that philosophy of how we're trying to move in state government, because the comments that were made were absolutely right. We have multiple state agencies, and as a director of a state agency, and when I was director of the Department of Agriculture, I was first and foremost concerned about the Department of Agriculture. And I was responsible for that agency and for that budget, and I would appear in front of legislators to talk about the Department of Agriculture. And every other single state agency does the same thing. It has its own set of statutes. We had a State Board of Agriculture. There's a Transportation Commission. There's a you go on and on and on. And the thinking behind the enterprise leadership team was really getting at what the co-chair has been struggling with, and frankly what we struggle with, is how can we describe what we're doing in state government that demonstrates that we're being efficient with the taxpayer dollars that we get, or with the fees that we receive. And it is a struggle for us, and it's a struggle for us to do at the state level, enterprise level. And certainly now, when you all are facing a budget shortfall and you want me to sit here and say, where can I cut on administration in state government so we can continue the programs that we have running and not make any impact on the taxpayers, but make sure that state government is running as efficiently as possible. I know that's what a lot of legislators are thinking. And I wish I could give you some easy examples. But from my long tenure in state government, I can tell you we have been doing that constantly. And it's little things here and little things there and doing the best we can with the limited resources we have. So we have few great examples of what we've done on an enterprise level to demonstrate efficiency, how to quantify that. And I think both my fellow directors were right. We're not that sophisticated yet. And it really is much more of a focus right now on agency by agency by agency. That was a very long-winded answer to your question. I apologize.
I have to share with you, I think it's great you folks come together and sit down and just talk about, you know, how things are going, best practices, learn what's going on here that may benefit over here.
Exactly.
I think that's a great idea. Any other questions from the committee? Alrighty,
so I have one more slide on the ELT, and then we are going to talk a little bit today about my role as the director of the Department of Administrative Services. So we had an ELT retreat at the beginning of this year. We spent a day together, and then we took one of our regular meetings because we couldn't get all of our work done. And we've got a lot of new members, which I think I mentioned to you, and a lot of new directors in state government. And really getting them together and reconnecting on what is the purpose of ELT and what we want to focus on for the next year to 18 months. And I just wanted to share with you, yes, they were aware of my areas of emphasis, but that is not what drove the decision-making amongst the director members of ELT. And these were the priorities that they came up with in terms of what they want to focus on. And we're now taking the next steps of trying to identify those two or three things in each of these areas that we can say, we're going to do this and have it accomplished in a year to 18 months. So it's an ongoing work. It's not something that we've done in the past with ELT, but you can see the priorities in terms of leadership and workforce development, and it really fits into the work around the Oregon Management Project, which is focused on managers, but how are we also addressing our whole workforce issues and challenges in workforce development. Equity, which is something I had mentioned, a lot of the agency directors are very interested in and supportive of. The systems and operational processes, and that is that continue.
Really quick.
Yes.
On equity, does that include regional equity? Making sure it's, you know, that opportunities for coastal and rural communities get addressed as well?
Mr. Chair, yes. And when I mentioned equity early on, for me, given my background, that is a very important priority for me. We are a very diverse state, and how we interact with people on the coast may be different than the way we do with people in the Portland metro area, with Eastern Oregon, and so that definitely is part of the equity conversation.
Perfect. Thank you.
The systems and operational processes we really look to our improving government steering team, and they are interested in kind of trying to identify what is that next system or operational process that we can focus on, like the leasing project, to identify, and I would agree with the statement that was made, we really look for ways to avoid cost. More so, I think, and this is being very realistic and honest with you, there, from my perspective, there are not a lot of places where you're going to say, I can go in and do this and save $25 million. I'd like to be able to share that with you, but if I had found it, I would probably be in a different job, one that's paying a lot more money in the private sector. So it really is how we can continue to look from an enterprise level, and what is that next leasing project, or what is that next thing we can do to take a next level of efficiency and avoid some cost in the future. And then finally, continuing the conversation about the role of ELT and how we work together and how we can continually improve that. So that was all I was going to say about my role as Chief Operating Officer and how we really kind of operationalize that through the Enterprise Leadership Team, unless there are any other questions that you might have. I wanted to kick into now my role as Director of the Department of Administrative Services. And obviously, I am the person where all things stop in terms of managing the operations at the department. And you heard this from George Naughton last Thursday when he was talking about the agency. We really have kind of a split personality, a little schizophrenic every now and then, in that we have policy leadership that's provided through the Chief Operating Office, through the Chief Financial Office, and the Chief Human Resources Office. Some might say that that's the place where we tell agencies what they can and can't do. And then we have a direct service and support role, and those really fall under the Chief Human Resources Office and the Chief Administrative Office. And those are services that we do provide to state agencies. It could be human resource type functions, financial kinds of functions, payroll functions, and you'll hear more about those when we get into those various division areas. Here's a high-level org chart for us. I'm appointed by the governor and serve at the pleasure of the governor. And within the Chief Operating Office, we have off to the right there a communications function for the agency, our government relations function, the Office of Economic Analysis, which produces the economic forecasts that you all use, and then we do have an internal auditor for the Department of Administrative Services. Beneath me, there are three direct report divisions: the Chief Financial Office, that's headed by George Naughton, and in that you have budget and management functions, statewide audit and budget reporting, capital finance and planning, statewide accounting and reporting, DAS business services. Under the Chief Human Resource Office, and Madeline Zeich is our Chief Human Resource Officer, we've got the classification and compensation system, employee and labor relations, that's where the state's collective bargaining work takes place, workforce policy and development, and information management. And then the third arm of the agency is the Chief Administrative Office, and that officer is Brett West. And under that is the Enterprise Asset Management Function, which is really the assets of state government that DAS manages. So facilities, fleet, surplus property would be examples there. You've got Enterprise Goods and Services, which are goods and services we provide, procurement, risk management function, printing would be examples. And then DAS IT itself, so the IT function within the department. Then the dotted line off to the right represents the Chief Information Office and the state CIO, which is Alex Pettit. You, 2 years ago, passed legislation that made the CIO report directly to the governor. So they are now a dotted line back to DAS. They are still physically housed in DAS, but they have the Enterprise Security Office, all control over IT investment and planning, the state's GIO, Geospatial Enterprise Office, GEO, Strategic Technology Officers, and those functions under Mr. Pettit. And he will be in front of you on Thursday talking about the Chief Information Office. The mission of the Department of Administrative Services is the central administrative agency of Oregon state government. Our mission is to serve state government to benefit the people of Oregon.
So let me ask you a question about the internal audits.
Mm-hmm.
Is that strictly within the Department of Administrative Services?
Mr. Co-Chair, yes, that is.
Let me ask this question, and I know there's been a change of who's running the Secretary of State now, but when the Secretary of State historically completed an audit, mm-hmm. and the agency received it, was there anyone else besides that department and the Secretary of State who reviewed those audits?
Mr. Co-Chair,
besides our good LFO staff, I know that. But was there someone on the executive side that said, Director, are you taking care of this?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair. I get copies of those audits and the agency response to the audit. And if there's something flagged in there that would warrant us being concerned about the function of the agency, then that is something that we would follow up
with. So you have a professional on your staff who's taking a look at them.
Mr. Co-Chair, it's probably George and me. I'm turning around to look. Am I close to being correct? It's not a standalone person. So our internal auditor, that's not their job.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah. Representative.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And thanks for your presentation. I know that you have information technology kind of in three areas there. Can you make a distinction about what their roles are there in the last three of the four is information technology?
So the last box to the far right, the dotted box, mm-hmm. that is the state chief information officer. So he has responsibilities for IT functions throughout the enterprise of state government. In the chief administrative office box where it says DAS IT, DAS information technology, that's the IT functions that supports the Department of Administrative Services only. So it's our internal IT shop.
Any other questions? Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I had some discussion, I heard some talk about the IT format. I think the gentleman earlier alluded to the current operators and stuff are dying off because you don't have the upgrade infrastructure. All of these different IT locations, I understand that they are, you know, internal. Are they talking to each other? Are they, you know, is there one central control? The way I get it is that everybody has a standalone system that's not connected. And is that costing a lot more money? What are your ideas on how you're going to streamline this and comparable costs that this, by doing this, is going to create more efficiency and is going to streamline the process where we got better control over our IT functions?
Mr. Co-Chair, I am an expert on IT. I understand it inside and out. Not. I don't at all. And that's a very good question to ask the chief information officer, because that really is his job. Agencies have IT functions within those agencies that support the agency systems that they need to run their agency. And then Alex, as CIO, has kind of overarching responsibilities and places within IT that have been consolidated. A couple of examples, the state data center. And if you've been around for some time, and if your colleague who's not sitting next to you was here, she could tell you a lot of great stories about the state data center. I won't go into that, but you can have that conversation with her and certainly ask Alex. And then most recently, the governor's executive order around security. So there is a lot of concern about the security of state systems, and we know a lot of hacking goes on. And so the governor's executive order was an effort to consolidate the security function within the chief information officer. And security positions that have, up until this biennium, been within agencies, in next biennium's budget, they are slated to be transferred to the CIO's office so that there is a centralized security function. We have a lot of IT systems in the state that are old. That is a problem for us, and being able to upgrade those systems is critically important, and I would view that as being into a place that results in cost avoidance. State government, I think, has struggled to do major IT projects, and we have many examples of those. And so the CIO's office has created these strategic technology officers that are connected. They have agency assignments. And we've created a stage gate process that is a much more structured process for agencies to go through when they're doing a new IT system. The whole goal between that stage, behind that stage gate process is to have successful IT projects implemented. But the, now you've completely maxed my knowledge around IT, and I would ask that you ask the CIO when he's here on Thursday.
Okay, well, I will thank you for that. I will, because one of the things that we've been dealing with are pretty good issue, not to include the, well, looking at hacking, for one, but in terms of access to personal data that we have here in the state systems and stuff. And perhaps it's not so bad that we're using outdated COBOL and other programs like that, because hackers are not probably designed to deal with those systems. So we might be in a good position if we stay that way.
Mr. Co-Chair, I'd never thought of it that way. Until all of our programmers die, and then no one can access the system, including those of us that need it to run our agencies.
I move we return to the abacus. Please continue.
Okay. So a quick snapshot of the DAS budget overview, and you can see we are made up of a mixture of general fund, lottery funds, other funds, federal funds, other funds non-limited, federal funds non-limited, and our total funds budget. The vast majority of funds that we receive is in the other funds category, over $900 million proposed in the 17-19 budget, and you can see history from 13-15, 15-17, and 17-19. We get a little bit of general fund. Lottery funds are mostly debt service. And in the other funds, non-limited, you'll see a pretty big drop there from 15-17 to 17-19, and I asked the LFO staff if I am incorrect in how I describe these things to flag it. But that drop is due to public universities debt that used to flow through DAS's budget is now going through HEC. And so that significant drop is due in large part to that change. You will also note that in terms of positions, we're jumping from full-time equivalents in this current biennium of 826.4 to 890.75. That usually is a flag for why are we adding positions, especially in this challenging budget time. About 30 of those positions are due to the new human resources information system, the HRIS project that we've been talking about, the IT project, and staff, limited duration staff to continue the implementation of that project. So these are not people that need to operate the system. It's just the ongoing work for implementation. And then the remainder of the positions represent those security positions that I talked about that up to this point in time have been housed in state agencies. So DAS itself has one security position that will be transferred to OSCIO's budget. Of course, that would be neutral in this, but if you were DHS and you had two positions, DHS would show a reduction of two positions and an addition here. So it's not new positions, it's a transferring of positions. About a little over $430 million of the DAS's budget is debt service payments. So we do a lot of debt service. I think a lot of you are familiar with those from days gone past. I think about light rail as an example, or the Portland Convention Center. And
at some point in your presentation, can you take 15 or 20 minutes and elaborate on that, just to do a 101 training for this committee, who that's probably very new?
Mr. Co-Chair, on the debt service piece?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll make a note of that. And
I have to believe that's pretty easy to walk through and explain where those dollars go to.
I think we probably have experts that can do that. Okay, so that's a
Representative Holmberg, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. Again, I was waiting for the director to finish her train of thought.
Right.
Director, I wanted to ask you a question about delinquent debt, and I think while I was looking up details for my question, you may have already answered part of it. LFO is going to be coming out with a report in the next few days with the amount of delinquent debt agency by agency for 2016. So the only numbers that I've got in front of me are 2014 and 2015. But what I noticed is in 2014, DAS was carrying about $156 million in uncollected debt. But in 2015, that went up to $480 million. I don't know where we are right now, but do you have any sense of what that increase reflects, or where things are going, or what happened?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomberg, I don't have a clue. I'm going to turn around and see if anyone wants to tackle that question now or if that's something
Mr. Chairman, if I may, why don't I just say I'm going to ask the question now, and I know that we're going to get some more quality time with you in the next few days.
Sure. We will put that on a note to get bring you back additional information.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. You will also, I'm sorry.
Oh, we had a question. I'm sorry, Representative.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Yes, before you leave this slide, Director Koba, how are you going to add significantly to the FTEs and with a budget that's significantly reduced from the current biennium, or sort of hearkening back to the prior biennium?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Marsh, as I mentioned, I think it's about 40 or 45 of the new positions are merely transfers. So they are reductions in other agencies' budget being transferred into the state CIO's office, and that's on that security function. So it's not new positions. It's new in our budget, but they are positions that currently exist throughout state government, if that makes sense.
Question.
Please.
So does the funding for those individuals stay in their home departments, or because you're not showing an increase in revenues here?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Marsh, I believe the funding also goes with the position, but I'm turning around. Yep. So, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Marsh, it's part of our assessment.
What was the question? I'm sorry.
The positions, the security positions that have been in agencies that are being transferred to the CIO's office, where's is the funding coming from the agencies, or is that funded a different way?
Chair Smith, members of the committee, George Naughton, the Chief Financial Officer for the state. What we ended up doing in the governor's budget is you see cut packages in all the agencies, and it has been added to the assessment for the Chief Information Officer. So you will see that state government service charges for a number of agencies have gone up, and that's because we've spread, as we talked about on Thursday, those costs of the Chief Information Officer have been assessed out to all of the agencies.
So in order to help the committee, and again, folks, keep in mind we have brand new committee members who are asking great questions, but there's a learning curve here. Can you get us a list of which agencies will be involved in this process and which positions will be reduced here and brought over to the Department of Administrative Services?
Mr. Chair, we certainly can.
Representative, would that help in this?
Yes, and to see the funding that goes with them.
And I mean,
I'm still
see the
a
dollars
flummoxed by where those how those match up.
Okay. Is there any other on that you think? Because I think if they get to that, that'll that'll help. Representative?
And then additionally, that would help. It's a little narrative of how do you deal with less than an FTE that gets transferred? Just a little narrative thing about how the process for dealing with that.
We take their head and leave the body back.
Arm and a leg. Sorry.
George, would that be all right if you could get that for us? Okay. Thank you. Madam Director,
okay.
Let's continue.
All right. You better make me quit cracking jokes because I'm not very good at it, really. Okay. So we have a number of policy option packages in our budget that each division will go over when you go to those divisions in detail. But these are the three POPs that I wanted to highlight for you that are first of all, important to me, or there is a lot of discussion circled around legislation for the third one that I wanted to highlight. So the first one you've heard some about. It's the Human Resources Information System. This is a critical project for us, and we have been working on it now for 3.5 years. We have been going through that. LFO staff says
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, I was just looking it up. It was July of 2012 when the EL team started the process for the HRIS system.
So we've been working on it for a long time. We have been using, as I mentioned to you, that more rigorous structure around IT development in state government so we can have a successful IT project. So we've been using that stage gate process with the Human Resources Information System. I think the time frame alone would indicate to you how complicated this new system is. This is the new management system for human resources in state government. And as Pat Allen had mentioned, many agencies have created kind of their own internal IT systems to manage human resources because this old legacy system, 25 years old, if not older, is not meeting the needs of agencies. So this is a critical project that needs to move forward. It's challenging, obviously, in this budget environment because there's a cost attached to it, $18.5 million for this coming biennium. But this system will fail, and we really can't afford to not have a statewide human resources information system. But at the same time, we want to make sure we're doing it correctly. So it's been a huge effort that's gone into it. It's so far, so good, knock on wood. And when we get into the Chief Human Resource Officer presentation, Madeline can tell you a little bit more about the effort behind this and how we've involved other state agencies in this work.
Let me ask a quick, when you say statewide, those are agencies that use Department of Administrative Services services.
Mr. Co-Chair, no.
It's statewide.
It is the information system that all positions in state government go into. So you've probably heard like the PICS report, which is the personnel information blah, blah, blah system. That comes from ATRIS as an example. You look at a screenshot of like my position that's on the screen in the system, it looks like COBOL. I look at it and I think, how can anyone even read that? So it really is modern, and I think staff is showing you just how antiquated
and
the
so
system
it will,
is.
But it will be state.
Mr. Co-Chair, it will be statewide. One of the conversations that we've had at ELT is the fact that this is a cost avoidance opportunity for state agencies that have created their own little systems to manage HR. We want all those systems to go away. We have got to get agencies to buy into that, making all of those shadow systems go away, and truly use the new ATRIS system when it's in process. So part of the group that is working on this system is our change management effort and doing extensive outreach into state agencies to say, this is what's being developed. These would be the tools that would be available. It's probably not going to meet all of the needs of that every agency currently uses. So it is going to require some agencies change their practices and their human resources management to fit the new system. So reaching out to agencies to making sure they're on board with that and willing to do that is a really important step of this new project.
So one thing we'll want to do with that package is make sure you folks have a thorough discussion with us on the assessments you're going to charge to pay for the $18.5 million. How much is going to be a one-time assessment versus ongoing assessment? And we don't have to have that conversation today.
That's good, because I don't know the answer, Mr. Co-Chair.
But in the future, we'll need that.
The smart people in the back are taking notes, so
perfect.
Got it. The second POP that I wanted to highlight for you is a capital construction POP. This is planning money, $9.3 million to plan for two new structures. One is a building that would be built on the yellow lot, and the second is a parking structure and storage facility on the red lot. For those of you that don't know that, these are two lots that are currently used going that way on the Capitol Mall. This would be a building that would house state government's command system in case of a Cascadia event or a large event. If a Cascadia event happens, there's probably only one building on the mall that would potentially continue to be operable, and that's the Department of Transportation building. They just went through a remodel. Everything else is probably not going to be functional. So this resiliency building would be the place where state agencies would go to manage state government post-catastrophic event. It would be built to withstand a large earthquake and would be built to run on, I'm so not technical on this stuff, wouldn't need power lines to bring the power in, right? Okay. probably generators and things like that. So in the meantime, once the building is constructed, so this $9.3 million is the planning money. Assuming that is funded, then we're looking at construction beginning in 1921 biennium. We have a number of buildings on the Capitol Mall that need to be renovated, so we would be rotating state agencies into that new building while those buildings are renovated. High on that list are the Department of Revenue building, the Labor and Industries building, even the exec department building across the street. The third POP is associated with Senate Bill 106, and Senate Bill 106 creates a public records advocate position. The bill as written places that position and another staff person in the Department of Administrative Services. There is discussion underway currently in this building about whether that's the right location for a public records advocate building or position, whether it should be in DAS or another place. I think that discussion will be ongoing. If it gets moved, obviously, then these two positions and the funding for the two positions would go wherever that bill takes it. But it is in our budget as a POP right now. So we're coming to the end of today. What we have planned for you for the next 3 days, tomorrow you will hear from our policy divisions. So this would be the Chief Financial Office and the Chief Human Resources Office. And they can go through in more detail their programs and budget that they oversee. Day three would be our Operations Division, so the Chief Administrative Office, including fleet, facilities, procurement, those functions. And then day four, you will have the State Chief Information Officer here in front of you to talk about their budget and what it looks like moving forward. Again, just to remind those of you that are new, this was a function that had been housed in the Department of Administrative Services. There was a bill in 2015, House Bill 3099, that made the CIO a standalone entity, and the CIO now directly reports to the governor, not to me. So they are kind of a dotted line attached to our agency, but a standalone entity, and you will hear from them on day four, as well as a public testimony, I believe.
So let me ask Paul a question. One of the things the co-chair and I discussed was having further conversations on those agency fees that get assessed and spending some time helping this committee understand DAS's roles in providing services and how those fees come back and how those other funds have potentially general fund tied into them. Is there going to be a time in the near future where we can take some committee time to go through that?
We can look for some time.
And Mr. Co-Chair, we did provide a response to you. It's probably with LFO staff right now and not been disseminated to those questions that were asked last Thursday.
Okay.
There's a little bit of information in there, particularly the general fund component of our assessments.
Okay.
That's answered in that question, but you would want to look at those responses and then we can work with staff.
And George, you did a great job the other day. I think what we're going to need to do is expand that conversation and do a little 101 training for the whole committee about how that process works.
Makes sense.
Okay. Questions of the committee?
Mr. Co-Chair, one of the things that I could offer, if we can hustle through perhaps day three, if we can hustle through the Chief Administrative Office functions, there might be time at the end of day three if we wanted to try to do something around assessments. But I think it really depends on
how many. We've also got a couple of days free built into our calendar.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you guys make that work.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
That's everything that I have today, unless there are any additional questions.
Paul, anything we need to be thinking about? Any members, are we all good? Yep, Representative?
If I could just make a comment, if that's appropriate, Mr. Co-Chair. DAS is really the spine of state government. We are providing the infrastructure here, and when you talk about outcomes and how can you tell the story to the public, the fact is you really can't, because the public is not that interested in governmental efficiency, or the public is. We are far removed from the kinds of outcomes that the public is looking at, which is high school graduation rates and the number of people in prisons and foster care, the number of children in foster care. But if you circle back, that's all predicated. This is where you start with those outcomes. And I just want to note that I particularly appreciate starting this conversation with understanding your philosophy toward leadership as a part of our infrastructure. Because that really, there really is an opportunity as you're working with these systems to invest them with those qualities in terms of equity and accountability, developing the workforce that eventually radiate out to all of those outcomes that we are so invested in across the state. So I appreciate the high level on which you began the conversation today.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? All righty. Let it be known for the record that Senator Johnson is excused for today,
And Director Koba, we appreciate you and your folks being here today. And Michael, anything else we need to think about?
Yes, sir.
We're good? All right. Seeing nothing before us, we're going to adjourn for the day. Good? All right. Seeing nothing before us, we're going to adjourn.